I am here with Tanya Vanden Wallenberg. She is a feminine energy coach. She and I are going to be talking today about feminine energy, what that is, and how that can help women to learn more about their own feminine energy. I connected with Tanya through the Vivacious Femmes Reclaim Your Feminine Energy Facebook group that she made. She is using the group to connect with women and talk about issues that are deeply personal, but also can be very liberating to discuss things that we normally don't talk about, everything from bravery to shame. She often goes live in her groups and has a lot to say and has helped many women simply kickstarting conversations around difficult subjects and helping people feel less alone in their struggles. So, Tanya, tell me a little bit about how you define feminine energy.
First, Dawn, I have to say thank you so much for having me. It is truly a delight, and I'm so happy that you are inputting your strengths into uplifting women as well on this podcast. So congrats on that. I appreciate you. I get this question more often than what my name is. It's always a paragraph because there's no two-sentence answer to it. It is really the traits that all women and men have that have feminine and masculine energy. Men and women both have it. Typically, men have more masculine and women have more feminine. The best way that I can explain it is to put yourself in a situation where you've been around someone and for whatever reason, you know that you do not like this person. That is their energy. That is their core. If you have feminine energy, then you can feel their femininity coming off of them. And it really has a lot to do with their connection to certain traits as well. Feminine women that are connected with their feminine energy are strong, they're intelligent, they are soft, they are warm, they are not competitive, they are loving, they are nurturing, they are very open and adventurous and not afraid to be vulnerable, not afraid to be authentic. And it comes in lots of different archetypes. There's no one way to be a feminine woman, but it has everything to do with connecting with yourself deep on a spiritual level and understanding your vibration, what you put out without saying a word.
I really dig that answer. That's so cool, especially how you're talking about being soft yet confident without being competitive, because that's something that I was actually using to describe you when I was talking about doing this interview. She's so confident without being intimidating. A lot of times when you see very confident women, it kind of can trigger a little bit of insecurity within us. And then we feel like, oh, I could never talk to her or we would never connect and that kind of thing. But I don't get that sense from you. So what is the difference there?
Thank you. I've worked on that, believe it or not. I was not born an angel. When it comes down to it, honestly, it has to do with the love that I have for women naturally. Connecting with that, being vulnerable. With every woman that I see, I have come to learn how to see them from a place of compassion. So I believe that my compassion and understanding and the link that I have with my feminine energy keeps me from being intimidating. And it was definitely something that I had to work on, but that's what the connection truly gave me. It helped me to let go of those walls that I had up to try to prove myself to someone. I don't feel the need to prove myself to anyone. I'm just me. I think that's the soft part that you pick up on.
As a feminine energy coach, how do you bring women to a place of this deeper acceptance so that they can work on themselves?
A lot of times we are preconditioned from the moment we get up and start walking around to our little spirits are stifled. We're told to stop doing certain things. And I'm pretty sure that you can attest to this. As a young girl, you got congratulated when you didn't cry. You were a big girl, even though you're bleeding because you fell off your bike. So there are different things that we are conditioned to stifle in our femininity. And it's really shown to us as being weaknesses at a young age. So as we develop and get older, we lean more into our masculine. We look feminine, but we lean more into our masculine energy in order to cope, because a lot of times that is more prized. That understanding, truly all women have the ability to really dig deep. And it really depends on what type of trauma that they have accumulated over time. But the first thing that I always, always, always teach women is to understand how to soothe yourself, to get out of that negative chatter that we all have in our heads that tell us we have to be the best, we have to be perfect, we have to outdo this person. This woman is a threat to me, this woman's a threat to my job, this woman's a threat to my husband, my boyfriend. Look at her. Look at what she's doing. Look at. So getting out of that chatter and breaking it down to really self-soothing and saying, that's not true. What makes you think that's true? Why do you think that she's after you? Why do you think that we are so competitive? This is something you've been conditioned to believe. This is not true. Get out of your head. So that whole self-soothing and really connecting to not worrying about the outside and focusing more on yourself.
You can't ask these questions without getting some really serious answers. And I'm willing to bet that a lot of women have been trying to avoid those answers, you know, because you stuff them away and you know on some level that you shouldn't compare yourself to someone who's completely different from you and has had a completely different life. But we do it anyway. And to know then that there is some self-regulation within addressing the triggers is, that's deep work. I'm sure a lot of people have struggled with that with you. How do you deal with that when people start to struggle with these deep questions?
That's a good question, because of course it's all very much so individual. So say for instance, I'm with a woman that is self-conscious about her weight and she works in the gym. And she does not want to do anything about her weight. She feels comfortable about her weight unless she's at work. So the question is, why are you there? Well, because I like to work out. Okay, well, you can work out at another gym where you don't feel uncomfortable. Why do you work here? And then she starts to kind of unveil why. Well, I feel like I should work wherever I want to work. I'm like, you can. Of course you can. But you chose to work in a place where you are really self-defecating. So I need you to really dig deep and understand why you chose that place out of all places you could work. Once you get past that and they really start to dig, different things start to unveil. And a lot of it has to do with feeling unworthy. Yes, I'm comfortable with my weight when I'm not at work, but when I'm at work, if I'm around other women that are smaller than me, then maybe that would shame me into doing something about it.
That's sad.
Once they get to the point of truly understanding the why, not the surface why, but the why. Once they get down to that why, then they are liberated into really understanding that they are in control. They can choose whatever they want to do with their life. And that is absolutely, you are absolutely right. Why am I working at this gym? I don't even like these people. I can work anywhere. It has a lot to do with asking those difficult questions, getting down to the bottom of it and just pressing them. Gentle press, of course, but to really dive deep, you know, and to really ask themselves at their core, why do they not feel worthy? Or why do they feel less than? Or why do they have such resentment?
So what I'm hearing is that in your practice, you're guiding women into sort of a safe space that allows them to realign with themselves. Because this feminine energy, like we were just talking about, as a child being told, stifle your emotions, you're being too much, you're not doing the thing I want you to do. And so then later in life, we feel unworthy when we have these very real reactions that are part of us, but we've been told they're not okay.
Absolutely. I feel that it's super important to believe in something more than yourself in order to have more of a broader insight of your capabilities, what you can really do. It's really just so easy to write things off when you're familiar. We tend to write things off as being, that's just the way I am. Mm-hmm. And you're just familiar with this version of yourself. If you really ask yourself enough times, you really feel like it is okay to cry if I lost my dog. But because you're in front of your dad that ridiculed you, or your mom that ridiculed you, or your husband that think you're being ridiculous, then you stifle those feelings because you're trying to portray yourself in a certain way. But the truth is, you're a woman and there's strength in those tears. That same compassion is going to help to enliven you and everybody else around you.
That's almost literally what happened. I broke my foot and I didn't cry because I was with my dad. And so I walked on this broken foot for like a whole day before I was like, yeah, I think I really need to go see somebody about this. And they were like, your foot is broken. Look at this bone has a crack in it. You didn't cry or anything? Like, you didn't say anything? And I was like, no. And my dad was like, why not? And I was like, well, I didn't want you to see me crying. And they were like, that's ridiculous.
You didn't cry because you were rewarded so many times in your youth that it was better that you didn't.
Oh, yeah. I was commended for, it was called bravery, when I didn't cry.
Yeah.
And sometimes it was simply because I wasn't afraid. And then I liked that praise of being called brave. So I stuck to that because I was like, that's what I'm supposed to be doing.
The thing that really fascinates me is that we never come up with an understanding as young girls to say, but I'm a girl. I'm a girl. I feel this way. This is valid. Even compared to our siblings, our little brothers, our cousins and things like that, they're boys. We watch them do things and we always still get congratulated if we're playing like they play. But if they play like we play, they get shamed. It's a lot of knocking the energies around to, especially at such a young, impressionable age, not allowing them to feel their emotions fully, to be able to identify when something's serious and when something's not. Going through those emotions when you are stifled and told that you shouldn't have emotions, then you grow up with a lot of problems, because just because they tell you not to doesn't mean that you won't.
Right. And then you can't work through them properly the times when you really need to. And then you cause issues for yourself and the people around you. I see this a lot in parenting. I have 2 children, 4 years old and 2 years old, as you know.
Adorable.
Thanks. The thing that irritated me from the very beginning when I saw the other mothers, because I went into motherhood with 0 knowledge. I mean, I had never held a baby before. I had briefly held my friend's baby who had given birth a few weeks before me. I had not changed a diaper or dressed them or fed them, nothing. So I had no clue. But I was observing the other mothers, and the kids would fall and cry or something would happen and they would be upset. And the go-to response was always, you're fine. And that bothered me so much because I was like, clearly they're not fine. If there's something going on, I acknowledge what is going on with them. And I allow them to, even if it irritates me, that's the thing. That's why they say you're fine, because it irritates them, because they are triggered on this deep level where they didn't get to feel that way. So they don't know how to unpack it. And they don't know how to hold that space for the child. So I actually had to do a lot of work in the beginning. It was very difficult for me to adjust to that, but I really felt like I had to push through that no matter what. I completely understand what you're saying about this early programming, because now that I have both a boy and a girl, I can see this so clearly. And it's interesting how my daughter wants to understand football. Like, she's two and she sees a contact sport and she's all about it. Yeah. And my boy, he sees me painting my toenails and he's like, wow, that's so cool. Like, can you show me more? Trying to be as sort of, we're traditional and conservative, but I also want them to not be stifled. So there's a balance to be fine-tuned there within that and try to make sure that everyone is having equal experiences and hoping that later in life they don't have the issues that I had as a teenager where I just couldn't deal with myself and I didn't know what was going on. Nobody was acknowledging the struggles that I was having emotionally. There was nobody to talk to.
Emotional health is such a huge issue, and it's really the number one issue that a lot of women face. Like you were saying about your son and your daughter, so you have an athlete and you have a creative. Mm-hmm. Allow them to be the athlete and the creative until they get bored and get on to something else. It happens all the time.
Exactly. Yeah, it'll play itself out.
Right. It's about allowing them to just have those experiences and allowing them to blossom and learn on their own. We do a lot of coddling and they need to learn on their own. We need to give them some space. But yeah, I know that we got off into a tangent with childhood, but that is the number one catalyst that preconditions us. And that's where the practice starts. But I just wanted to clarify, it's not our parents' fault. It's not any of our elders' fault. They were doing the very best that they knew how to do, just like their parents did, just like their parents did. The more that we grow and know and learn and read and research, the more we start to get more in tune with what feels best and to getting that balance to have more communication and emotional health and growth. So for me, something that I teach my women all the time is to let the past go. Going back, delving in, digging into it, reliving it for 10, 15 years in therapy is not going to get rid of it. What would get rid of it is moving forward, learning from it and moving forward.
So like really heavy on the forgiveness, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
What choice do you have? You can stay in resentment, slowly die a miserable death, and poison every relationship that you're in without even knowing it because you are littered with all of these different emotions that you've been holding on to, waiting for that long-lost person, your father, your mother, your aunt, your ex-husband, or your ex-wife, or whomever. You're waiting for them to come out of the woodworks and say, I am so sorry. So you can move on with your life? Is that not the ultimate slavery? Forgiveness is the only way to move forward. Blaming other people for where you are never gets you further along in your future. Never, ever.
That is so true. So how did you come to this point of being a feminine energy coach?
I was destroying my life. I was slowly destroying my life. I was living out those preconditions. I was very codependent. I was very domineering. I was very vocal. I thought that everybody should think the way that I think. I was super, super opinionated about everything. And I was super, super comfortable in that space for a little over a decade. And as time progressed, things started to show up big time in my life. My higher self, my spirit, was basically like, okay, listen, you need a wake-up call. So after I had a slew of major incidences happen in my life, my dad passed away pretty suddenly. My marriage was falling apart. We were battling with alcoholism and verbal abuse. I really had to let go of a couple of really good friends of mine because they abandoned me when I needed them the most. That was very painful as well. My mother and I had gotten into it for a little bit there, and I got into two car accidents within 3 months. Everything was just crashing down on me. And I really got a clear understanding at that point that I was the common denominator. There was no one else that I could blame. So I started to go inward. And that was the best thing I've ever done in my life. I started reading. I started spending a lot of time alone, meditating, doing spiritual practices, picking up anything I could, from seminars to books to YouTube videos, getting motivation and clarity from wherever I could. And when I stopped just listening to it and started putting it into practice, my life started to change exponentially. I knew that there was something that I really, really wanted to try before I gave up on my husband, because we are so good together and we had lost our way. I felt very strongly that I had to try to do everything that I could before I gave up. That is how I came across feminine energy, through the inward work, through the spiritual work. I got into feminine energy haphazardly. It was kind of like breadcrumbs, and I followed the breadcrumbs and found the tree of feminine life and stabbed it and started drinking the sap vigorously. It was like, just help me. I'll never forget, I did this one exercise that I learned. I went back and decided that this was going to be the day that I was going to try this. And I tried speaking to my husband in a different way, with different body language, with a different tone of voice, with a different approach. And it worked. It more than worked. It was like a miracle. How he reacted to me, I could predict it down to the letter from what she told me was going to happen.
Wow.
So once I got a good whiff of that, I was like, I am on my way. And ever since then, I get closer and closer to myself every day. It is a beautiful feeling.
That is so inspiring. Oh my gosh. What a fascinating story, going from pain to this self-healing, and to have this testimony of reclaiming yourself and your marriage. That's so cool. So congratulations, first of all, for pulling all of that back together. That's super impressive. I mean, so many people just let it all crash and go, oh, why me?
Absolutely. It's why me. It's my dad's fault because he cheated on my mom. It's my mom's fault because she let him. It's my husband's fault because he wouldn't do what I told him to do. It's my kids' fault because they're supposed to be asleep and not listening to us argue. It's this whole shift of blame that happens. I can't explain it any other way than my higher self finally kicked in and was like, listen, you can keep going down this road if you want, or you can listen to this feeling, because I've been shaking you for the last few months and you've been ignoring me. But this time, did you see that accident? You almost got killed. You really need to stop and look at what you're doing. That was it. I just got a jolt. It's been an amazing journey. Absolutely. And when you do get into the space of connecting with your feminine, you are learning more about yourself every day. And it's never a chore, because you are really fascinated with the journey. You're really fascinated at how you start to grow and react to the world around you. A lot of times when women first get into practice, they are like, okay, so how long is this going to take? Because I need a man. And my sister's getting married next year. And I'm like, let me tell you something. It's going to take as long as you allow it to take. When you stop focusing on what you need outside of you and start focusing on what you need inside of you, everything outside of you will attract you like a magnet. You'll be fighting them off. Don't look at me for any secret tactics. You know, this is work for you, not for you to get something else. This is work for who you really are.
Yeah, it's that alignment. It's that self-growth and self-acknowledgement of why do I feel this way? And what do I need to do about feeling this way, whether it's good or bad? Essentially, it comes down to that. I kind of did a lot of that work myself. And you're right, it's never ending because you put it aside for a little bit and then you go about your life and then stuff just pops up and you react how you react, whether it's good or bad. And then you self-evaluate and you're like, okay, I didn't like how I reacted there. Oh, I reacted this way instead of that old way and it went so much better and that's so good for me. And then you start learning. So I imagine that you wanted to take this forward and help other women. Is that why you started the Facebook group?
There were several different reasons why. The main reason is because I felt this overwhelming need to expose women's hearts to what I now know. Because I taught myself this from so many years in so many different places and put my own practice together. This is all the different things that really helped for me. You may come across quite a few feminine energy coaches that's trying to get you to dress a certain way or look a certain way, act a certain way of being. And I knew that was not my course. My course was a lot deeper than that. So when it came to me starting the group, I really felt like I didn't have a choice. I had to start it. It had to be authentically me. And I was really moved by the women that I've attracted into this group. So it would be 10 and then 30, 40. And what I noticed was my energy was attracting a certain type of woman. Hmm. And there's no arguing. There's no fighting. There's no maliciousness. There's no shame. Why would you do this? Why would you say that? It is a very open space because this is what we need to that womanly, beautiful vulnerability to lift each other up. So like I said, I really felt like I didn't have a choice but to start doing this work. If I would have kept doing what I was doing before, I would have been miserable.
Yeah, and you're totally right about the vibe in the group too. It's very non-confrontational. The way that you frame your questions, I think, for discussion are what keeps that consistent because you tend to ask it in a sort of what would you choose for yourself and why kind of way. So it's yeah. Really like we're sharing, but it's introspective sharing. And so no one is really comparing themselves to others. I feel like when I'm looking at the other comments, it's curiosity and I'm learning things. It's just what someone has experienced or how they feel about themselves personally. And there's no judgment and it's really very cool. So I really appreciate you making that group and I love that group so much. And I also love when you go live. If you could give an example of two situations that come up frequently with women that you help with.
The number one that I would say is codependency. It has a lot to do with looking for approval from others, casting judgment, and trying to fix other people's lives. Those are really huge, and that's under the codependency umbrella. The other one, I couldn't say one is higher than the other, is worthiness. So many women struggle with not feeling worthy. I was a makeup artist for 14 years, and I worked with a woman that worked at this particular store for 15 years. She started working there, she was 18 years old. And we all, because of COVID, were out for 3 months and they paid us. It was a blessing. It was amazing. I was like, huh, would you look at that? This is great. But not in 1 second of any part of the day did I feel like I didn't deserve it. Like I felt like I was getting over. I'm like, no. Do you know how many holidays I've worked? Do you know how many arguments I've got into with the public? Do you know how many times I've had to redo this and redo that? And so her thought process through the whole 3 months was, I'm so lucky. I'm so lucky. They didn't have to do that. They didn't have to do that. Now, mind you, when I got into a conversation with her, and she was really surprised at my attitude. And I said, listen, you can work wherever you want. This loyalty will get you running any store that you want. You are worthy. You can do whatever you want to do. And I could see the wheels turning in her head that she had never contemplated that, yes, she deserved this. She could possibly get another job. It never occurred to her. But that's just a small example. Of course, it goes a lot deeper into self-worth with allowing men to do what they want, to try to gain love or approval that way, having their children, knowing full well that they have absolutely no want in raising the kids and trying to get them to realize their worth by giving them children that they don't want. Trying to prove their worthiness by going above and beyond and hurting themselves financially for people, hurting themselves time-wise and sacrificing their livelihood for others that would do half as much for them. So worthiness is a huge one, but also the blame and trying to control things. Those are really big ones.
Wow, that's really fascinating. That's really deep too, because I can see how that touches all aspects of a person's life immediately when they're struggling with these things. And I'm sure a lot of people don't even know that they're codependent or they're feeling unworthy. I mean, otherwise they would not do the things that they do that are harmful to themselves and others. I really appreciate your time. This has been a fascinating conversation, and I'm really glad that I've had the chance to have you on our show. For our listeners, I'm going to be dropping her information into the description of this podcast so that you can contact her if this is the kind of help that you're seeking, or if any of this has resonated with you and you feel like she could help you. Very easy to talk to, folks. This has been Tanya Vanden Wallenberg. She's a feminine energy coach, and it has been an absolute pleasure speaking with you. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Bye.